This is KUOW's The Record. I'm Bill Radke. Let us start this show with some vigilance. Bill Gates is concerned, though not panicked. Satya Nadella is cautious, but Elon Musk calls it an existential threat to humanity. Artificial intelligence is advancing, partly because of work being done here in Seattle. The promises of AI sound dazzling, but can we prevent superintelligent computers from redefining, maybe ruining, our human lives? My guests are Oren Etzioni, CEO of the Allen Institute for Artificial Intelligence in Seattle, and MIT physicist Max Tegmark, author of the new book Life 3.0, Being Human in the Age of Artificial Intelligence. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
I'm already intimidated, and if I were listening to this through my radio right now, I would be wondering, am I going to be able to understand this conversation? Oren, you head the Allen Institute for AI. Will you please simply explain to me what we're talking about? What is artificial intelligence to you?
Artificial intelligence is a big word for computers doing more sophisticated things over time. And often these sophisticated things are pretty modest, like the Google Translate app that allows you to translate key phrases or sentences to Japanese.
Self-driving cars, Amazon Echo, are we in the AI realm already?
All of the above. So yeah. All these programs, these robots, these cars have elements of what's called artificial intelligence or AI in them.
Max, agreed? What is artificial intelligence in your estimation as you think about it?
I agree. Intelligence to me is simply the ability for something to accomplish complex goals. And what we have right now is machines that are already better than us at accomplishing certain very narrow goals, like multiplying numbers really fast or memorizing a gigabyte, but are nowhere as broad in their intelligence as a human child who can get good at almost anything if they spend enough time on it. But the holy grail since the beginning of the field has been to see if we can eventually manage to replicate all human intelligence in machines and be able to do absolutely everything we do even better, even making radio shows. Not yours, of course, but the other ones.
Of course. As I mentioned at the top, Bill Gates and Satya Nadella and Elon Musk and you are all being asked your opinion about whether we're headed off a cliff. So let's slowly get into how we can best manage, if that's the word, artificial intelligence. And I'd like to hear you talk to one another about this because you agree and you disagree. Will you compare notes for us? I'd love to hear the two of you think about where AI is headed.
Sure. So let me first start, though, Bill, by saying the way you framed it in terms of are we going off a cliff is a little bit like, when did you stop beating your wife?
Okay.
My feeling is that AI is not beating anyone up. And in fact, there are huge potential benefits. So the Allen Institute for AI, where I'm the CEO, and Paul Allen, whose mission we abide by, our mission is AI for the common good. That means we're thinking about how AI can make a positive difference in the world. And to give a simple but really important example, the notion of self-driving cars, we have 40,000 highway deaths each year. We have upwards of a million accidents. And the research shows that as many as 80% of these could be prevented if we used better technology, if we used AI in cars, to put it bluntly. And so to me, the question that I ask isn't, is AI going to drive us off a cliff? Is how is AI going to prevent us in the near term from going off a cliff? How is AI going to save our life?
I completely agree with you that there are all these great benefits. And in the short term, the next few years, obviously, we're not going to be worrying about machines outsmarting us at everything and taking control and so on. I also agree with the three principles that you proposed in your recent op-ed in the New York Times about things we can do to steer the development of AI in great directions. I was interested, though, that you said there that you viewed concerns of Elon Musk as being kind of science fiction. And I would love to understand better what exactly it is that you feel is science fiction. Is it the idea that machines can one day outsmart us at everything that you view as science fiction or impossible? Or do you feel that, in fact, yeah, sure, AI can one day succeed in doing everything, but the idea that that could cause problems is science fiction?
Right. So if we think out hundreds of years, thousands of years, all the way back to the Big Bang, to the future of the universe, there's no question that what's going to happen with AI and humanity, and again, to allude to your book, Life 3.0, what is life going to look like once we have intelligent machines? There are huge questions there, fundamental existential questions there. I completely don't deny that. Myself, as an empirical computer scientist, I'm much more focused on what I see is foreseeable, is predictable, we can analyze with data, and that's much more the next 5 years, the next 10 years, the next 20 years. So I think there is an element of duration. What's the duration that we're talking about?
Good. So it's very much a matter of time scales then, because what I hear you saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, is not at all that you're a carbon chauvinist, you know, who thinks that intelligence can only exist in blobs of meat, basically.
And carbon chauvinist. In other words, we are the ultimate and we just can't let ourselves.
Yeah. From my perspective as a physicist,
humans.
Of course, this human exceptionalism is sort of appalling, the idea that you can never make anything smarter than us. So that's not what you're saying. And it seems like what you're saying is just that you want to focus on the next 5-10 years. I think, though, for really big changes, be it climate change or something, or AI, we should also pay serious attention to things that might happen in 50 years. And I wish we had thought more about climate change, you know, 50 years ago. So if, as many polls of AI researchers suggest, you know, we might approach human-level intelligence in a matter of decades, and if there are also tough questions that we want to answer before then that might take decades, I would love for us to really start doing the research to find those answers now, you know, not the night before someone switches on a superintelligence. I mean, how would you feel about that?
I think it's a very fair point. I think it's very hard to predict what's going to happen in 50 years. And I do agree with you that we need to be thinking about it now. And institutes like your Future of Life Institute are important. But again, it's a lot more fun to disagree. So actually, nobody likes to be called a chauvinist, but I am a carbon chauvinist in the following sense. Not in the sense that I think that AI and superintelligence is impossible, but in the sense that I really care about people more. So I want to make sure that our rights and that our status as humans are protected and we do have the right conversations. For example, for me, the right conversation right now is actually a conversation about AI and jobs. It's not the only conversation we should be having, but, you know, we do have a limited, you know, with all the stuff about sports and politics, we have a limited set of things to think about. And to me, the most important conversation we ought to be having about AI today is about its impact on jobs.
I completely agree that we want to think about AI and jobs and make sure that all this great prosperity that can get created by increased automations actually makes everybody better off. If we can't do that with an ever-growing economic pie, you know, shame on us. And I also agree with you on this other short-term point you make in your New York Times article that we should use AI to create new ways of helping people, not new ways of harming people with this pointless race to the bottom, military arms race. But I feel we shouldn't ask what should we prioritize, you know, feeding our kids tonight for dinner or climate change. We have to make room for both of these things. And I completely share your enthusiasm for keeping humans around and making sure that we humans can flourish down the road. And I think if we start to get machines which are as smart as us or more, that doesn't have to be a bad thing. I think silly Hollywood flicks like The Terminator are so annoying because they just make people worry about absolutely the wrong things. It doesn't have to be a bad thing to be in the presence of beings more intelligent than us, because all three of us here in the studio have experienced that already when we were really tiny. Our parents were smarter than us, and that was okay because their goals were aligned with our goals, right?
And religious people are already familiar with the idea that there's a higher intelligence
who exactly has their best interest in mind again, right, then. And so I think this is another very fun technical challenge for geeky people like you and me, Oren, to think about in how can we make machines actually understand our goals, adopt them, and retain them. And, you know, if you take your future self-driving car and tell it to take you to SeaTac Airport as fast as possible and you get there covered in vomit and chased by helicopters and say, no, that's not what I asked for, you know, then you would really appreciate how hard it can be to make a machine really understand what our goals actually are. And we have children, and that has taught us that getting our children to understand our goals and actually adopt them and do what we want are also two different questions. That's also a really fascinating technical challenge. And finally, how do we make sure the machines retain our goals if they keep getting smarter? You know, there are really fun technical things that we should tackle in addition to make self-driving cars safer and stuff like that, so that we have those answers by the time we need them.
So the problem that I see is that it's very natural for people to be afraid. So much is changing. Technology is so opaque, so scary. We have the notion of the golem. We have, you know, Hollywood hype like the Terminator. We have folks like Elon Musk saying we're unleashing the demon and things like that. So I think people are actually really afraid now, and I don't think that they should be. I think what we have on the plate right now is some very important technical questions that are long-term. And I think we have some important, you know, shorter-term issues to discuss, some positive and some negative. And that's much more of a balanced view, not that the one you hold, you're a reasonable guy, but reasonable things you say, and especially that Elon Musk says and Stephen Hawking, do get distorted by the media, by the headlines.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I really share your argument there also that we need to inject more optimism in this debate. And that was actually a core reason why I decided to write this book, because I felt we really have to have more focus on the upside and have a conversation about what sort of future that we're excited about, we want to aim for.
I'm talking with MIT's Max Tegmark, author of Life 3.0, and Oren Etzioni, CEO of the Allen Institute for Artificial Intelligence here in Seattle. And I do want to get to the optimism, but first, I think our listeners might have a fear about artificial intelligence when it comes to lethal autonomous weapons, assassination drones, etc. How worried are the two of you about that, about weaponization? Weaponization.
I think Max and I furiously agree that weaponized AI is extremely scary, extremely dangerous technology. I think that what's really problematic here, and this applies to this issue and some other ones, is that whatever we do, we see statements from people like Vladimir Putin, who says that whoever masters AI will master the world. We see China saying explicitly that they want to be number one in AI in 2030. And that's just at the high level. So you can imagine that the militaries for those countries, as well as our own, are working on weaponizing AI. So the one thing that scares me more than AI weapons in the hands of our military is AI weapons in the hands of dictators.
And fortunately, it was the same way for biological weapons, that the one thing that scared us more, that scared the biologists more than having biological weapons here, was having everybody else having bioweapons. And that led to this great collaboration between countries that were political enemies, where they actually negotiated an international treaty to stigmatize and ban bioweapons, and similarly with chemical weapons. And even though there's been a lot of cheating, this has really succeeded in greatly limiting the use. And in November now, there's a United Nations meeting to try to do exactly the same thing with AI weapons. I think it'll be great if we can stigmatize lethal autonomous weapons in the same way, so it just becomes viewed as a disgusting weapon that no civilized nation wants to have. Of course, there'll be some cheating and there'll be challenges, but it'll be better than just having a free-for-all.
From weapons to jobs to privacy and on, honestly, do our listeners have any say in any of this? Who is making the big decisions? Venture capitalists, consumers, geniuses, dictators, voters?
Well, I wrote this book because I want to empower people to have a say in this. And step one, obviously, is to really educate oneself and realize that one shouldn't worry about stupid stuff like the Terminator, but ask one's politicians what their views are on jobs, income inequality, and AI, and all the other things they were talking about. There are a lot of concrete things like that that people should ask their political leaders about. And also people who are doing the engineering and the science should, of course, ask themselves what they can do to make sure it becomes a force for good. And I am quite optimistic that we can create a great future with AI as long as we win this race between the growing power of the AI and the growing wisdom with which we manage it. We just need kind of a change of strategy, because in the past, when we invented less powerful technology like fire, We won this wisdom race by learning from mistakes. We screwed up a bunch of times and invented the fire extinguisher. We invented the car, and then invented the seatbelt. And soon we'll invent self-driving cars, and it'll get even better, right? But with things like nuclear weapons or superintelligent AI, we don't want to learn from mistakes. We want to do the safety engineering approach, where we plan ahead and thereby avoid the mistakes in the first place. And I think if we do that, we can create an even more amazing future than our ancestors even dreamt of.
Bill, what I want to respond to is this feeling of helplessness that you shared that I'm sure a bunch of listeners have. And what they really need to do, and it's not just helplessness thinking about AI, it's about these bigger forces, it's about computers, it's about technology. And we really need to educate ourselves. We really need to educate our children about this. And I think of things like Hadi Partovi's code.org that recently got a boost even from this White House and also from industry, where really everybody, it's basic literacy, should be able to program a computer to understand what computers can and cannot do. And that's the first step to starting having the conversations that Max is talking about and to start not feeling completely helpless. If you can't understand it, you're shut out of the conversation.
And I would just add one more thing that everybody can do, which is in your next after-dinner conversation or over-beer conversation, talk about what sort of future you would be excited about seeing. You know, if I have a student walking into my office for career advice and I ask where they want to be in 20 years and all they can talk about is that they might get cancer or might get stabbed, you know, that's a terrible approach to career planning. I want them to come in with their eyes on fire and talk about what they're excited about. And then we can think about how to avoid the problems and pitfalls and to get there, right? But look at what we do as a society. We go to the movies and watch the things about the future that are all dystopic. We read books and it's all dystopia. Then we get paralyzed by fear and our society fragments. If we can get excited about a shared positive vision for the future, then we're much more likely to get that future.
Okay, one point of agreement I'm hearing is that we wish we could go back in time and prevent James Cameron from making Terminator, because I count three references so far. And you talked about excitement, Max. Then what are you excited about in your foreseeable or maybe your kids' foreseeable future? What's going to be so exciting about where artificial intelligence is coming soon?
In almost all areas. For example, I'm one of so many people who has lost loved ones to diseases that we were told were incurable right now because we humans hadn't been smart enough to cure them yet. I'm quite sure that there are cures that exist. It's not against any laws of nature to cure all cancers, right? So if we can use AI to help with this, it's going to be wonderful. And you can take any one of your other favorite unsolved problems today that we're stumped by and feel pretty confident that AI can help with it.
Thank you for mentioning that. So at the Allen Institute for AI, we have a major project that Max is aware of called Semantic Scholar, which is really a tool to help scientists solve humanity's thorniest problems. It's basically a way for scientists to be better and more efficient at their jobs. And particularly, we are moving in the direction of medicine with the goal of ultimately eliminating cancer. And so AI, in this way, can really make a very positive difference in the world.
Is AI going to eliminate hatred and racism and our other current plagues?
You bring up a very important point here, which is, I think there are key parts of this conversation we have to have which cannot just be left to tech geeks like me and Oren, because they involve everybody else in society too. So questions about what sort of society we want to build. Do we want to create the sort of nanny society, you know, where AI is always looking out for us? Do we want to have a society with where we have more power as humans? And how do we want to treat each other? Do we want to have one way of thinking that sort of imposes its ethics on the rest of the world? Or do we want to create something much more diverse? These are questions which cannot be left to AI researchers alone, and we should all discuss them.
Oren, how about you?
I would say that technology is, to me, like a fancy pencil. And you can use it to draw beautiful pictures. You can use it to draw, you know, racial epithets and very negative statements. I think that the choice is ours. the conversation needs to be very broad. Something that I love about Max's book, it has his irrepressible optimism and just a lot of fun. And that's a fun way to educate yourself to get started being more informed in the conversation.
Max, you did say that in the age of artificial intelligence, we're all going to need a good sense of humor, right? And irony.
I agree. I think we need a sense of humor in many ways. And one thing which is kind of ironic is that some people have built up a lot of their self-worth on this idea that we humans are somehow the pinnacle of intelligence and we're the smartest and coolest species. So it is kind of ironic if we end up creating beings which are
which knock us down to number two.
But I don't think we should try to found our self-worth on this human exceptionalism stuff. It didn't go so well when the Nazis tried to found their self-worth on being somehow superior to everybody else. And I really don't like when we humans say it's okay to have slaves because we're superior to them, or it's okay to torture animals because they're not as smart as us. Come on, that's not where a real joy in life comes from. If we discovered that there was a much smarter civilization somewhere in the Andromeda galaxy, surely that wouldn't in any way diminish how much fun it is to spend time with our friends and do the things we love, right? So why does it have to be any less fun to live just because we have intelligent machines around us?
Max Tedmark, this has been fun. Thank you. MIT physicist, author of Life 3.0, Being Human in the Age of Artificial Intelligence. And Oren Etzioni, here in Seattle, CEO of the Allen Institute for Artificial Intelligence. That was some of the best surface scratching that I've ever participated in. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.